Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the world's greatest and onlyest Doom Patrol-related podcast.
Hey, I'm Paul, and it's a no-waiting week. You can find me on Twitter at reading_hicks. Send an email to waitingfordoom@gmail.com if you want your email read on the show. And we're on Facebook, and if you want to read a blog post about our show, mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com is the place to go, and our episodes available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com.
Yeah. Hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at Avangarv. You can also find on Twitter our sentient show account, Wilfred, who is at WFDpod. And as always, we are proudly brought to you by Comicosity.com.
Yeah, and this week on Comicosity.com, I was reading an interview with Keith Giffen. Keith Giffen, who wrote Doom Patrol Volume 5.
Yes.
And he's talking about his revival of Sugar and Spike. They're the comedy toddler characters from the 50s and 60s, I think. Uh-huh. And he basically updated them as private eyes who deal with the superheroes' dirty secrets and embarrassing stuff. So they were included in the Legends of Tomorrow miniseries, and the trade is just about to come out. I think it's out this week.
Oh, cool.
But he has said that they're going to be carried on into the Blue Beetle book, which has got me buying the Blue Beetle book when the trade comes out of that. So
carrying on as in a backup story or like support?
No, cast? They'll be supporting cast members.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
So I've got the trade. I haven't got it yet. It's coming in the mail. It's been posted, but I'll be reading that soon. Cool. Yeah. Yeah, so it was a really good interview. Check it out on Comicosity.com.
Awesome.
Anyway, how was your week in comics?
I finished the Batman Contagion trade paperback last night. That was pretty good. Bit of a head scratch on some of the stories I included at the end. There was like a Robin three-parter that took place right after Contagion, where he was facing off against Maxi Zeus.
Yes.
Yeah, not one of the best.
Yeah,
villains, but it was kind of a funny story. And then there was a Batman and Deadman story as they went off to deepest, darkest South America and stuff, and it was fine. But Contagion as a whole, that was a good story. I also read I guess you'd call it a graphic novel. It's kind of like a one-shot comic book called The Rockabilly Plump Core.
Oh.
And yes, it's about three very overweight rockabillies, Ace, Sue, and Genzo, who are secretly working for the United States government, and they go down to Venice Beach where, you know, they have those typical muscle building men. And those muscle men are being led by the evil what's his name? Evil Dr. Swole, who was also slightly overweight at one time, but also got into muscle building. And there's this whole thing about genetically modifying muscle. And it's basically a big fight scene on Venice Beach. And, you know, their rockabilly pickup trucks turn into robot fighting suits. And it's very bizarre, but very entertaining at the same time. and that was written and drawn by a gent by the name of Peter Yong. The Rockabilly Plump Core.
Wow.
CORPS. So it's a little bit different, a little bit out there, but I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
Oh, good to hear.
How about you, Paul? What have you been up to?
I picked up a comic this week called, and I hate to bring this in, but the Catwoman Election Night Special.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So just to give a bit of context right now, we are recording, it's early on Wednesday morning in America right now, and it's a Wednesday in November, and there's just been this little hoo-ha called an election, and we are both a bit gobsmacked at the results. So just to put this in context, this is a year where David Bowie and Prince died, Lemmy died, Darwin Cook died, Alan Rickman died, and just to cap it all off, Donald Trump will be the next president.
Yeah. So congrats, Sauron, you've won.
Yeah. One straight in the nuts for everybody for that.
What a day. I'm shell shocked that this has occurred, and I will be commiserating with our American friends that did not vote for Mr. Trump for quite some time, I dare say. Because it's going to have, as much as I'd say, it will have an effect globally. You know?
Yeah.
So
we wish everyone the best, and we hope it's not as bad as everyone imagines. But those of you who want to flee the Trump lands, you're always welcome in our homeland here in Australia.
I did tweet that I could possibly fit 3, maybe 4 Americans in my apartment.
I could buy some shipping containers and bury them up on the hill and turn them into residences. So,
you know, I
could get a few hundred over. Yeah. Anyway, this getting back to what I read.
Yes.
Now, I didn't buy this comic because I love to hear political stories about Catwoman. It had a Prez backup, and I was very excited to read Prez. I got it from the library, the Prez trade, and it was the best thing I've read this year, easily. Mm-hmm. And this had an extra story which isn't in the trade, and so, okay, I'm buying a $4.99 Catwoman comic for a 12-page story. Prez, if you don't know, it's set in the future where things are so crazy that the most popular person on Twitter can become president. And this teenage girl becomes president, Beth Ross, and she keeps bringing in all these practical concerns into this very farcical political realm. So this is a future where everyone has gun hats. And you have a trigger word that sets off your gun hat, but people keep picking, patriotic words like Constitution. So someone says Constitution, all the gun hats in the room go off.
Oh my God.
People get shot.
Oh, Jesus.
The president is trying to, reduce the amount of gun violence, but she's dealing with everyone who wants to tackle the worst thing in the world, which is birth control. Yeah.
Right.
So it's pretty scathing stuff, and it's pretty satirically biting, but it's excellently done. It's all written by Mark Russell, who's the current writer on the Flintstones comic, which is shocking everybody by how good it is. Mm-hmm. And pencils are by Ben Caldwell, and Mark Morales is the inker. And it's a great little 12-page story, but if you are interested in Prez, and I think you should be, I think it's the book for now, go and get the trade. Prez, look for it. It's fantastic little comics from DC.
Okay.
Anyway.
But yes, I am still shocked by today's. I spent most of my working day just staring at my monitor as the news was getting updated, and I even have a song that I will put in at the end of this episode that's basically sort of just says, I can only stand and stare, and it's and because bad things are happening. So much love to our American brothers and sisters and everyone else. We hope you are all doing okay, regardless of the change at the top of the totem pole. Anyway, let's try and keep this episode happy and give everyone something enjoyable and distracting from what's going on in the real world. And let's have a look at what's going down on Durrington Way.
This week on Durrington Way, it's pretty quiet. Mm-hmm. Pretty quiet. Gerard hasn't been tweeting much. I don't think he's been tweeting at all last month.
Haven't seen much, no.
No, and he hasn't done an update on his blog for a while.
Okay.
So I might refer to some tweets we got from Arbud, F09, or Arbud, as we know, our friend. And he said, referring to DP sales info with alternate covers and promos from DC, I was suspecting more than 19 on the charts because it came in at number 19, Doom Patrol number 1.
True.
Hope it does not fall too much and reach a sustainable level. So longevity was his hashtag there. What do you think about that, Mike?
It is a good point. But I think for a team like the Doom Patrol to come back with, that's still a pretty good ranking for its first issue. But I do have the concern like that the last couple of runs of the Patrol only made it into like the low 20s in terms of issue numbers. So... Mm-hmm. Yeah, look,
It may not matter because, I mean, they refer to Young Animal as a pop-up imprint, which so it's there for them to tell the stories they want to tell and then it's meant to go away. So it's not meant to be, you know, something that lasts for 20 years. You know, they want to tell a Doom Patrol story. They might have, you know, 36 issues in mind. They might have 20 issues in mind, you know. Given how strong they're going, I'd be very surprised if they're not thinking, you know, at least 2 years' worth of this stuff.
Oh, let's hope so.
Yeah. But, I mean, we are used to Doom Patrol coming and going in our life, aren't we, Mike?
We are. We are.
Yeah. Seasons of Doom come and go. And, you know, sometimes the leaves of Doom are falling.
Yes.
Sometimes the sprouts of Doom are sprouting. So, you know, we're in a sprouting season at the moment. So.
Oh, aren't we just? It's sprouting and it's going to take hold for about 4 years, I reckon, at least.
Yeah.
But no, it's a valid point, a valid concern there. It would have been nice to see it do better, but hey, I'm still pretty happy it was in the top 20 for that month. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, but this weekend is the North Carolina Comic Con and Young Animal, massive presence there. They were taking questions on Twitter for us. I dropped in one. I asked about Mr. 103, where he could come back as Mr. 118. Who's the periodic table villain, for those of you who don't know. Yeah. So hoping that gets picked.
If anyone does attend that, throw in a quick question as to whether the creative team are ever going to appear on this show.
Or whether they're regular listeners. Are you regular listeners, Gerard and Nick?
Hype us up a bit, you know?
Yeah. We really want them on the show, but we're trying to be cool. We're not trying to be, you know, screaming fanboys.
No.
You know?
Hey,
it's no big deal if you come on the show. We don't mind either way.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe we'll talk to you. I'll see if we're busy.
You know, we'll be just as calm and relaxed as we are with every other creative guest we've had on the show. Yeah, for sure.
Shit will be lost. That's what I'm saying.
Whoops.
Anyway, so that's my kind of vague, disappointing going down on Darrington way this week.
That's good. Look, the guys are probably busy, you know, churning out the rest of this first arc, you know?
Yeah.
Down the good stuff. So, yeah. They can't be everywhere at once.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Cool. Is that ticking?
Sure is. It's the doom clock.
What?
Yeah, surprise. Okay, so the last Doom Patrol book we had was issue 3 of volume 6 from Gerard Way and Nick Darrington and co. So it's been 0 weeks since the last Doom Patrol book because issue 3 came out today. The next issue, number 4, is due December 14th, so that's 5 weeks away. So a little bit longer than usual, but we've had it worse. The last appearance of the Patrol as a team was 1 year and 13 weeks ago in All-Star Section 8, number 3, and Justice League United, number 12. I think we're getting so close to them being united as a team, though. I reckon has to be by the end of this arc, especially after what happens in this issue we're going to talk about tonight. Anyway, this week in Doom Patrol history, released on November 7th in 2001 for $2.50, was issue 2 of Doom Patrol Volume 3 from John Arcudi and Tan Eng Huat. This issue was titled The Wrong Way to Do Right and saw the very first mission of a newly formed patrol managed and funded by Thayer Jost until Robot Man decided otherwise. We covered this issue only recently back in episode 67, so you can check that out for more details. And that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Take the Earth's mightiest heroes, each an invincible champion of justice, and band them together to assemble the legendary Justice League of America. For 261 issues and 3 annuals, the DC Universe was defended from threats on Earth and beyond by this legendary team. Operating from a cave in Happy Harbor to a satellite orbiting 22,300 miles above the Earth to Detroit, Justice's First Dawn, a classic Justice League of America podcast, will follow the League through all their evolutions. Please join your host, Mike Peacock, as I seek to cover all of the issues of the classic pre-crisis Justice League of America series. Through the magic of the JLA transporter, each issue will be randomized, with special episodes covering a complete story arc if needed. Along with the issue coverage, we shall also look at what the then-current members of the Justice League were up to in solo appearances in other comics for the JLA cover month issue. So do not hesitate to activate your JLA signal device for Justice's First Dawn, a classic Justice League of America podcast on classicjla.podbean.com or by subscribing through iTunes.
Today on Doom Explaining, it's incredibly exciting. We have another new issue of Doom Patrol before us. It is Volume 6, Issue 3. Ooh. It's written by Jared Way, art and cover by Nick Darrington, variant cover by Simon Bisley. Metal.
Isn't that such a Bisley cover, though?
It's Bisley as.
Yep.
We have colors by Tamara Bonvillain, with special thanks to Marissa Louise. Who's Marissa Louise?
No idea.
We're thankful to. We don't know why. We are. Lettered by Todd Klein, the classic long-serving letterer for DC. Molly Mahan was the associate editor. Am I saying that wrong? It's Mahan. Anyway, and Jamie S. Rich is the editor. And the Doom Patrol were created by Arnold Drake. It doesn't say it there, but they were drawn awesomely by Bruno Premiani at the start too.
I'm a bit surprised that they don't have Premiani listed.
Yeah, it's a bit vague. I think Bob Haney was sort of partly a creator too. But, you know, the history books say it's Arnold Drake at this point. So,
yeah.
And the issue was called It's a Doomed World After All. And, Mike, what happens in the issue?
Oh, so much. And that's our show. No, I mean... Now, if you've not caught up on Volume 6 yet... we recommend you listen to episode 71 and then 74 to get caught up on those first two issues, okay? Okay. And spoiler warnings galore. If you've not read issue 3 yet, turn off now, go and read it and come back and, you know, nod in agreement as I tell you what happens in the comic. Because there's a lot that goes on in this, so...
Yeah, we're going to bust this one open like a Portuguese chicken.
Right. Okay, so it's the regular cover shows Casey reading a comic called Danny Comics, which features Casey on the cover with a pink furry creature literally falling out of the comic, reaching for Casey. And the variant cover is by Simon Bisley, and it's very, very Bisley. So we return to the Perpetual Cabaret, where Flex Mentallo is guiding Casey Brink around Danny World, explaining that the trees, the buildings, pavement, inside the cabaret and the ambulance is all actually Danny. Even the people, well, part of them. Everyone is happy in Danny Land. There's no pain or suffering, only joy. God, it'd be nice to be there today. Flex explains how Danny used to just be a street that could teleport, collecting outsiders as he went, and that's how he and Danny met. Flex goes on to explain that thanks to the Doom Patrol, Danny was saved from an attack by the Men from Nowhere. And seeing the team in action restored Flex's memory and his powers of muscle mystery. And all that happened in issues 35 and 36 of Volume 2 by Grant Morrison, which we covered all the way back in episode 31. So there you go. It's all circular. Everything's connecting. It's great. Flex finishes by explaining that eventually Danny became a world, which we haven't gotten to yet on the show. Spoilers. And eventually he found Flex again after some time. And now Casey is helping them to find the rest of the Doom Patrol. Right.
Mm.
When Casey asks if she is part of the patrol, Flex tells her she's part of a lot of things, but first she should enjoy a turn on the itty-bitty Bonsai Beach boat ride. Of course. Back in our world, in Casey and Terry's apartment, Larry Traynor is showing Cliff Steele, Robot Man, the strange shapes he can have form out of his chest. It's just really weird, these three black circles on his chest, and they do weird things like hands reaching out and spikes and, yeah.
They look like they're made of hair.
Yeah, I couldn't tell if they were hair or the negative energy, but it's really weird. Larry doesn't really know what it is that he can form out of his chest, I'm assuming negative energy, and that his memory is faulty. The last things he can recall are being on Ulan Island with the rest of the team, which is a nice nod to Volume 5 by Giffen and Clarke. And when he was last on the beach one night on the island, he was questioning his life and something, a beam of some sort, ripped down from out of the sky and ripped him off the island and out into deeper space. Larry then recalls coming to in a large cylinder in some sort of classroom, and he noticed an alien figure sitting in another cylinder across from him, waving. Suddenly a blast of energy shocks both Larry and the stranger, and then he woke up back on Earth, feeling not like his usual self and with the sense that something was after him. But suddenly Terry arrives home, bearing pizza, mushroom pizza, free mushroom pizza. And Larry and Cliff are just about to argue about finding the chief, but Cliff says no way, he's dangerous, and they should instead look for Rita, Jane and the others. Just as Terry asks what the guys are doing, Larry vomits up more of the black stuff and says he needs more negative energy to sustain him. And he comments, "Can you hear that?" referring to a high-pitched noise he's just noticed, but the others can't hear it. Suddenly, an alien figure similar to the one in his memory appears, saying, "Larry Trainer, we have followed your scent and come to take you home. You must be judged and joined to become whole in the negative space. X minus minus becomes nothing." Right. Meanwhile, at Mercy General Hospital, a squad of the strange robo-aliens that have been showing up in the previous issues have found the Dambulance. Uh-oh. We learn that they are called the Vectra, and they still seek the girl. The Vectra begin smashing into the Dambulance with their weapons, taunting him, daring him to open up. Meanwhile, back on the boat ride, Casey's watching puppet versions of the patrol sing It's a Doomed World After All to her. I'm not going to sing that, sorry. She hops off the boat and wanders through various displays of the patrol's history. The Scissor Men, the painting that ate Paris, the candle maker, until she reaches a locked door framed by a giant mouth. The mouth asks for a password, and noticing a giant tooth on the ground, Casey recalls the note she uncovered from her own tooth. "Good job," she replies, and the door unlocks. She steps through and finds herself in a geeky store called Danny Books and Games, like a comic store and game store. She looks at the shelves and through the back issue bins, and where she finds an issue of Danny Comics with an angry purple monster man on the cover. And printed on a banner in the corner of the cover is "New Inside, Your Answer to Everything, Casey." Oh. And here we learn that Casey was a pilot, the captain of St. Michael's Children's Hospital Jamboree Fighter Squadron, which was like a pilot squad within a Danny comic story. And she fought evil and had many adventures, but was haunted by memories of her mother sacrificing herself into the sun, destroying what her father had become. And the book says, "But while you, Casey, may now be having some sort of existential crisis reading this," Danny says, "I'm more powerful than I've ever been, and that Casey comes from his daydreams. She was the first superhero he was able to generate. She's made up, but she's made real, and Danny's very proud of her. Because she's Space Case, hero of the 33rd Nova Fang Starfighters Brigade, feared across the six galaxies. But during the day, she's also a driver and caregiver at the Twilight Sun Intergalactic Home for Elderly Care." Of course. That explains why she was drawn to being an EMT in our world, and why Danny became an ambulance to help her, watch over her, and protect and hide her from the forces that have now unfortunately found them. Danny says, "It's time for Casey to join the Doom Patrol. And while you're at it, you can call me Dad if you want." What? Much like myself, Casey looks up from the comic and says, "That's it, I'm out." She yells and she starts to storm out the store before a pink furry creature launches at her through the doorway yelling, "Fug!" Meanwhile, back at Mercy General, the Dambulance has taken quite a beating from the Vectra, who have now activated a device to unleash disorienting agony upon Danny. The ambulance starts leaking fluid in response, and the Vectra leader responds with, "Yes, open up and let us in. We will obtain the meat." And just as Casey's storming out of Danny World, she's followed by this Fug creature and Flex, and the world's beginning to crumble around them. Flex cries, "Casey, wait, you're powerless right now." And as she re-enters the cabaret, her leg snaps and literally disappears. Casey swears at this. Suddenly, the Vectra reach into the back of the Dambulance, and they manage to grab Casey and Fug out of the cabaret. The Vectra then enter the Dambulance themselves to begin their attack on Danny World. Meanwhile, the chief, aka Niles Caulder, is operating on a shrouded body, perhaps robotic. He closes a panel on the body and throws a switch, zapping his patient with energy. A robotic version of Niles sits upright on the bench, punches Niles, and storms off saying, "See you later, hand turkey." Finally, back at the apartment, the alien is preparing to leave with Larry and offers to take Cliff as well as a witness to Larry's apparent crimes, whatever they may be, and suddenly the three of them are teleported away to the negative space. Terry yells after them, "Good luck!" And the issue ends. Oh my god. Paul, what are your thoughts on issue 3?
Oh, well, so much in this book. So let's try and unpack it at the start. So we're on the cabaret, so it picks up exactly where the previous issue ends.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of interesting things in the background. So one of the things I've noticed at the cinema is showing Space Case 6, The Return of Torminox, which according to the Who's Who page for Space Case, which is in the back of the issue, that's the name of her dad, Torminox. That was one of his code names as a hero, as he was called Science Dad and Torminox 4 or something. Yeah, so a bit of reference there. There were going to be fireworks on the street that night. I like the topiary animals on Denny Land. We get a great little flashback to the Doom Patrol fighting the men from nowhere on Denny the Street, which was the first story where we ever saw Denny from Volume 2, as you said.
Yep.
And some of the characters in the background on the next page as they enter the itty-bitty Bonsai Beach, they're very... like the end of Roger Rabbit, like there's this walking world globe with a smiley face.
A little hat, you know, in his hand, he's waving at them.
Yeah, but really skinny, like clearly not a person inside that costume.
No.
And all the, it looks like all the street lamps are sort of swaying and moving back and forwards. And yeah, but I love the It's a Small World ride. Yeah. With It's a Doomed World, because it basically, you know, journeys through the history of the Doom Patrol.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we see the parts where the Doom Patrol are at the middle of Volume 2 in the Grant Morrison run, where you can see Crazy Jane as sort of an animatronic puppet, and Dorothy and the Chief, and then there's even one with Beast Boy as a gorilla in there, and then we get highlights from the Morrison run more than anything as it goes through.
I love the little Brotherhood of Data,
yes,
perched around the painting.
So cute. Yeah, they're like little happy little Lego figures, aren't they?
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, what about you, Mike? What stood out to you?
Oh, the fact that I was wrong about Casey's parentage.
Straight out, bang.
Let's just get it out there. You know, yep, Mike was wrong, so what? It was fun to speculate.
I give it to Doug Zavisha, because he suggested Danny was Casey's dad, and he's closer than we are.
Yeah, well, whatever, Doug.
Yeah.
It was really entertaining. There's a lot going on. I'm glad we got Casey's history this early, and it does explain why the Vectra, who we now know are called the Vectra, it's nice for them to have a name, why they're after the girl, because she's actually a creation of the sentient being that they're chasing as well. She's like, I guess she must be some sort of prototype if she's the first superhero he's created. So that would explain why they're so interested in her as well as Danny. We know they want to make Danny burgers. That's part of their plan. But clearly, Casey has something extra special about her. If she's had all these amazing adventures in Danny World, you know, flying World War II era fighter planes 1 minute and then outer space jets the next, you know?
Yeah, she's basically a 1940s comic character in the first image of her.
Yeah.
You know, when, kid heroes were all the rage.
Mm. Yeah. So that to me kind of explains, why they're after her and Danny. I'm still scratching my head over what is going on with Larry and what those things were that were popping out of his chest.
Yeah, But Larry makes it explicit here that he needs, you know, violence and negativity in terms of, you know, action.
Mm.
So he said, I'm coasting on the, you know, the hyper-violence that you did in the last, in the apartment, Cliff, but it's wearing off now. So
I love the scene in the apartment where, you know, Larry's complaining about the noise and he goes, oh, I need air. And then Terry says, well, that's convenient because we just got this new window installed. And she's referring to the giant hole in the wall that... that was caused by the fight in issue 2 between the Vector and Cliff. And, oh, that was so funny. She's just sitting there eating a free mushroom pizza, you know.
She's wearing, like, this almost a pizza combat outfit.
Well, I looked at it closely, and I'm sure there's a sanitation badge.
Yeah, is she driving a garbage truck?
Ooh. That would be interesting.
Yeah, garbage truck collected... Cliff in the first issue.
Mm, because on the final page as well, she has a strange look on her face.
Yeah. After she, like, wishes she knows what's luck. Going on.
Yeah. So, yeah. And okay, the on the cover of Danny Comics, that must be Torminox, Casey's dad, because yeah. He was called Science Dad and he's kind of got sciencey stuff about him. And Danny's explaining that, you know, the reason... her mother sacrificed herself was to fight against what her father had become. So clearly science gone wrong, rears its head once again. And there's also an amazing tribute to the Crisis series. With
issue 7.
Yeah, with Casey holding a dead clown in the classic Superman Supergirl pose, and it's done in the I'm sure it's the exact same sort of title lettering and that, and it's instead of, like, you know, DC Comics and Crisis on Infinite Earths, it says, so I imagine at this point you're having some sort of existential crisis, and that's to be expected.
Yeah, on the original comic that was a 50 for DC's 50th anniversary.
That's right.
And, yeah, they've mimicked all the fonts and the lettering and everything.
Mm.
It's brilliantly done.
It's so good.
Yeah, and the talking dog, that is very Gabe Hardman, isn't it? Have you seen Gabe Hardman's book? What's it called?
Is that Kinski?
Kinski, yeah. Yeah,
so I'm aware of it. I've seen art from it. I have not read it, though.
No. Yeah, I just thought, Kinski panel in the middle. Yeah.
Yes. So
I love how you fill in my blanks, Mike. As I get old, as dementia takes a hold, I'm going to need you more and more.
Great. Well, we are a team. So another thing I've just noticed is that in that page where Danny Comic is explaining her history and we see the infant Casey in space, it's got an artificial leg.
Ah.
And I'm pretty sure that's the same leg. It is the same leg, I'm certain of it, that ends up vanishing as Casey tries to leave the cabaret.
Yeah.
The Vector are attacking and Danny World is crumbling. So that's, okay.
Yeah.
It's just like so much going on, but it kind of makes sense as well, in a way. Yeah. I mean, there's still heaps of questions that I've got, but, you know, like, who is Fug?
It's funny, my family are always after a new dog, and I was suggesting names, and I said Fug, and everyone latched onto that, and they said, we want to have a pug called Fug.
Oh,
so that was my big suggestion. The other one was Shitwaffle, but no one really went for that.
Just try and imagine calling Shitwaffle out loud when the dog runs off in your on your land. Shitwaffle! Come here, Shitwaffle!
Yeah, so Fug beats that, apparently.
Yeah. Funny that. So,
talk about this comic store for a sec?
Yeah.
Because I love all the little games in the background.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got send-ups of dungeon quests with Danny quests.
Yep.
And there's Dungeons and Danny, Danny Tech, which is Shadow Tech, I guess. Oh, no, Robot. Yeah, Shadow Tech.
It looks a bit like Robotech, but...
Yeah. Danny the Gathering, Dan Hammer.
Oh, there is Danny Run, so Shadow Run there, yeah.
Shadow Run, yeah. Oh,
Dan Hammer 80,000.
Yes.
Nice. And all the comic posters, like Danny Man for Superman and Tales from the Danny. I think Uncanny Danny.
Yeah. Spider Dan,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so
awesome
good.
Stuff.
Yeah. So, this issue was the highlight of my day.
Mm.
It was a great read. It's nice that we have, that we know of Casey's history, but there's still enough mystery there to have, I know it has me hooked. I want to find out where Larry and Cliff have gone and get this negative space explained. And I want to know more about Fug.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to see what's going to happen to Danny World now that the Vector are invading.
Yeah. But how amazing this art. The art is superb throughout.
It's so good.
It's
like Nick Darrington was born to draw on the patrol. You know?
Yeah.
It looks so cool. I love that it's harking back to what's come before. Like, Flex's history and the reference to Oolong Island and Flex himself, and yet it's still forging its own wild, crazy path ahead. It's a fantastic read.
And the writing is so... just the writing in the Vector scene when they approach Danny the ambulance and mm-hmm. they, you know, said... Just, I love just the breakup, the dialogue and everything. It's so dramatic and strong. It's mm-hmm. Do you even know who we are? We are the Vectra, and we are here to ruin everything. We want you to resist. And then they smash a headlight. Yep. We'd love for you to try to keep us out. And they all start smashing it. And they've all got these, sledgehammers.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's fantastic stuff.
and the Knowles interlude, we have to mention that as well.
Yes.
Because we have seen a robotic version of the Chief back in the 60s run, so it's been some time, but it's like, okay, where actually is Niles and what's actually going on? We've seen suggestions from listeners that, he's locked away somewhere experiencing a virtual reality environment, and that's why he's having all these weird little moments that we get shown, but it's like, okay, we need something more now,
Yeah. It's like, hand turkey is quite an interesting insult.
Yeah, I don't quite get what that's meant to. Maybe because robot Niles didn't like real Niles digging around in him with his hands? I don't know.
Yeah.
Sounds like a very Cliff thing to say, though.
Yeah. And it looks like the boss of the Vector shows up on one of the pages. So that...
Yeah, it made me think of Doctor Who villains a little
bit. Yeah.
How it's always some really weird, non-human looking thing that's calling all the shots. And this thing's kind of like, he's smaller than the rest of the Vector, and he's like this weird little floating gizmo.
Yeah, just made of angles. And with a three eyes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very strange.
Even his dialogue's fantastic. Engage neurotic pain amplifier. Bypass settings 1 through 4 and begin a disorienting agony. And then there's like all the engine is dripping. And he said, yes, release your fluids. Yeah. And, they want Danny's meat, which is just wrong.
Mm, poor old Danny.
Oh, Danny.
Yeah. But I'm now concerned about what Terry's story might be. The fact that this alien has appeared and is grabbing Larry and now Cliff and zapping them away. And she's, throughout all that, she's just laying on the couch, eating a pizza, reading a book, and she just, kind of looks over at where they were standing at the end of it.
Yeah.
And that's where it ends. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
She's not really, yeah, I wonder what her story is. It's going to be very interesting to find out.
Yep. It's very strange. And there's even a reference to Cliff being a lawyer.
Now, remind me when Cliff was a lawyer.
That was recently in the Legends of Tomorrow miniseries, which I mentioned before with Sugar and Spike, because it was the Metal Men story in that they engaged Cliff Steele to sort out their legal issues.
That's right. Yeah. I remember Martin Gray mentioning that story to us because Cliff Steele appeared in it. Yes, that's right.
So, in this comic, Cliff calls himself attorney at law when he introduces himself to Terry. But, I think you're onto something with Terry. I think there's more to her than meets the eye. Like, she's unflappable. I mean, she comes home to her apartment and there's, you know, two strange beings, a negative man with three holes in his chest and a robot who is a man. And it's no big deal to her at all.
It must be like an everyday occurrence to her, this level of weirdness. But there's something about that final panel where she looks over, and I'm going to have to research the title of the book or the name of the author that was on the book, which was Hannah Hock. I think. So I haven't encountered that phrase before, but believe you me, I'll be doing some research after this. Should have done it beforehand, but the issue literally came out about 45 minutes before we started recording.
Yes.
Yes. So, but yeah, overall, I loved it. Another great issue.
Terrific. Yeah. And at the end of it, we get a picture of the art which was used on the Flex Mentallo towel that was released at New York Comic Con and not given to us.
No. No. Monday.
Monday. Yeah. Let's
see what it's fetching on eBay first, I guess.
Yes.
Oh dear. But yeah, good stuff. Loving this run so far. 3 issues in and I'm completely sold. It's magic stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, for those of you saying it's weird, you're getting explanations in issue 3.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, some explanations. There's still lots of questions.
Actually, I've quickly Googled it. Hannah Hock is a Dada artist, a real life Dada artist.
Oh no. You said the D word. Dada.
Yeah.
Terry.
So is that a clue?
Terry Nunn.
Yeah.
Oh,
Number Nunn.
Nunn. Nobody.
Number Nunn was one of the agents of the Brotherhood of Dada.
Oh. This. Oh, okay. New round of speculation.
All right, back to the pin board. I'll get some more red thread out.
Yep, okay. So I reckon there's a connection between the Brotherhood of Dada and Terry Nunn.
Yeah, definitely. Whether, could she be Number Nunn in a new form, or is she the daughter of Number Nunn?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me if she was...
More closely connected to Mr. Nobody.
Yeah, it wouldn't be surprise me if she was the daughter of either Nobody or Number Nunn, seeing that Casey is the daughter of Danny. So it's like a legacy generational thing.
Wow.
When's issue 4 out?
5 weeks.
Damn it. Okay.
A couple of weeks before Christmas.
Excellent. Well timed. Yeah. Cool. Okay. Well, I think we've doomsplained the heck out of that one, and we've got more questions and theories, and love it.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Now it's time for the Mailbag of Doom, where we get your responses to our question of the week from last week. And we were asking everybody, what is the most fascinating fictional virus or ailment? That old chestnut. And we heard from Doug Savisha on his own website, and he said, how about that Y2K bug? Remember when we were all going to die, so we had to party like it was 1999? I do remember that. It was quite a thing.
It was.
Yeah, and then it was nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was all a big hubbub. Yes. We also heard from Steve Lacey at Quiz Lacey, and he said, the state of being knurred. It's from Discworld and is the polar opposite of being drunk. You achieve it by overindulging on coffee, specifically Clatchian coffee. Right.
That sounds like a hoot.
Mm.
Right. And then we heard from Dr. Ange, and he said, the Thanagarian equalizing plague. Horrific. Made everyone the same. Average.
Oh, dear. And he followed that up with, remember who saved them? Hyathis. I don't even know who Hyathis is.
Hawkman.
Right.
He's a Hawkman character.
Right. That would explain why I don't know who that is. Yes. Anyway. But yes. Good one, Ed. We also heard from Jonathan Dick at Real Last Name, who said, it feels like a bit of a cheat, but I always liked Joker Toxin.
Now, that's a good solid answer. Joker Toxin is solid stuff.
Yeah.
We heard from Wilfish at Wilfish, and he said, Ice Nine, the bioagent small cheat in Cat's Cradle by Vonnegut, or the Black Oil in X-Files.
Mm.
I've never read Cat's Cradle, but I remember the Black Oil. That was nasty.
It was horrible. We heard from FKA Jason at FKA Jason on Twitter, and he said, I've always been fond of the Rage Virus from 28 Days Later. It gave me the willies in the best possible way. That's a good one, yeah.
Yeah. We heard from Bob Garnellis at Slurmo, and he said, Salo Digby, that's Shrinking Violet from the Legion of Superheroes, circa 1988. Was she a virus then?
I have no idea.
I don't know either. But his serious answer is the Transmode virus, 1990 and before. I think that's the techno-organic virus that made Cable have a metal arm.
I believe so, yes.
Yes. You're an X-Men guy, you'd know.
I was. Moby1 at Shmoby1 on the Twitter said, I always like the I Am Legend tale. It's kind of like The Walking Dead, but with a vampire-like virus.
Yeah. I Am Legend was good. Yeah. We heard from Martin Gray at Mark Gray, and he said, oh, probably too late. Yeah, it is. No, it's not. Favorite fictional disease, the Blight from Legion of Superheroes, which was from the Legion of the Damned series, which I've read. That's cool. That's cool stuff.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Over on the Facebook page, we heard from Jared Driscoll, and he said, when my sister was young, she used to fake being sick to get out of doing chores. I used to say that she had FAKE syndrome. Does this count? I think so, because my brother used to do the same thing, Jared. Every time he would mysteriously vanish with some...
Oh, dear.
When there were groceries to bring upstairs.
Yeah. We also got an email response from David Edwards again, and he said, wow, you read my email out in full. There's nothing like the sound of my own voice to bore me stupid, only this time I sounded Australian. Awesome. I'll keep it shorter this time. He asked why no one said Darth Vader as a mask hider for last week's question of the week. But his answer for this week is the holovirus from Red Dwarf Ep Quarantine. And Mr. Flibble's very cross. You Red Dwarf guy?
I am, but I can't recall all of that episode.
Yeah, I did one pass through Red Dwarf when it was first on, and I've revisited it, mostly because I really like it, but a lot of people around me didn't think it was all that.
Boo on them.
And then David said, don't keep me hanging for 2 weeks again, because we had 2 weeks last time, and it might just delay my WFD gratification until I've got and read issue 3.
Yeah, go read that first, David.
Yeah, hang on to this set just a bit longer, mate. We've got some news.
I'm glad we told him that right near the end of the episode.
Make this set last.
Yeah. David. What about you, Paul? What's your favourite fictional virus?
Disco fever.
That's not fictional. That's real, man.
Well, the subcategory boogie fever.
They're both real. They're not fictional. You can't stop the music, Paul. Nobody can stop the music.
What about you, man?
I'm going to say, it's funny you mentioned me being an X-Men dude before, because... to the X-Men, and I'm going to say the Legacy Virus, which was the virus that was specifically created to target and kill off mutants back in the 90s. And that was about the time that I was getting bored with the X-Men. So I was just like, yeah, I remember that one. Kill them all. Screw you, X-Men.
Wow.
Yeah. I think most of them survived, though, or some shit. I don't know. I gave up after that. They got boring. And yeah, they ripped off the Doom Patrol. So, oh, dear. So you're sticking with Disco and Boogie Fever then?
Yeah, I caught it when I went to Funky Town.
Fair enough. Wow. Oh, dear. Okay, well, I think we might start signing off there. Much to, I'm sure, everyone, including David Edwards' disappointment, we're taking another break for a couple of weeks. We will be back in 3 weeks because I'm going on a cruise for 2 weeks. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I'll be on a boat, other buckets, as that song says. So we'll be back in 3 weeks' time. We will have a guest on the show, so that will be exciting. But Paul, what's that question of the week that we'll have given everyone plenty of time to answer?
Yes, the question is, who or slash what is the worst fictional artificial intelligence?
Oh, Wilfred be up there.
No, I didn't say the best. I said the worst.
Potato, potato. Okay, so that's our question that you'll have 3 weeks to answer. So no excuses, Martin Gray.
Yep.
But yes, as always, you can reach us in the meantime on Twitter at WFDpod. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can reach us on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page, or you can get in touch via Doug's post on mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com.
Okay. Awesome.
Well, there we go. That's it for episode 77. Thanks for joining us again, guys. I hope you've all read. Thanks, Paul. I hope everyone's read and enjoyed issue 3 of volume 6. I'm going to enjoy my cruise. I set sail on Monday, off to New Zealand, visiting Hobbiton.
Ooh.
Yeah, and spending the rest of the time drunk on a boat.
Are you going to Dunedin?
I would have to grab my itinerary to double check that. We've got like a dozen stops or something, I think.
Cadbury Factory.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we had a fun time at the Cadbury Factory. There was the lady was taking us around. She was very cranky, and she kept asking us questions like, "Who can name some Cadbury products?" And you know, after a while, I just started going Mars bars. She was really getting the shits. Maltesers. And one guy said, "Hey, once I opened a Freddo and it was upside down," and she's going, "No, that's impossible. That could never happen," which was very awkward.
Right. Good to know. I will check the itinerary and I will let you know. It possibly is, but who knows? I'm just excited to be getting away and and kicking back and doing nothing for a couple of weeks. So yeah, cool. Okay, that's all it, guys. We will catch you all in 3 weeks' time for more Waiting for Doom. See you then.
Bye.
I'm going to try and keep the energy and positivity up, but fuck. What a day. Good God. Anyway, okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1. What was that?
It's my beard rubbing against the...
Right. sensual. Okay, here we go.
This is for the Patreon support.